Hello, people. This is the PC Bombcast presents the Pop Culture Comic Pod. That is right. It is my favorite episode we do when we do it. It is all about comics and comic-related stuff. And this one features me, Bombcast J, and Just Bender. And we talk WandaVision, we talk X of Swords, we talk Battle Chasers, and we talk Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. And you know we love the stuff because we go back and forth quite a bit. And it's what makes this my favorite style of show we do. So please download, share, and let the world know. Typically, our comic book episodes get the best numbers, which I believe it directly correlates to how much we love comic books. So that said, I'm going to stop just jibber-jabbering over and over, and I'm going to let you hear the episode. That's going to happen right after the bomb, which is probably now.
Like, if she sees a dog before I see a dog, I can't get that initial, like, I'm going to go see that dog out of her. So I think I have to put an invisible fence up because the kids keep leaving the door open and she just shoots out the garage door.
Our dog is old and doesn't give a fuck about anything
anymore. Oh, my
other
one is the same way. He's like, well, I mean, I guess if you're going to be near me, I'll walk over and smell you, but otherwise you can fuck off.
Do you think a chunk of the proceeds for every invisible fence sold goes towards Wonder Woman?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Got to go along, because I just assume around the invisible hangar of the invisible jet, there's an invisible fence, right? So she created it.
Plus, isn't the mascara, like, blocked by a force field, invisible force field?
Got to be the same technology.
Is it? Yeah. That's the way they say it, right? I don't really know.
I think that's as close to a hard word as you've ever got, so I'm going to give it to you, because I don't know that it's not.
Yeah, I don't either.
I know you all ago, you said, and this is not your fault either, but I'm gonna name drop here. I'm gonna humble brag. I've met Mark Miller, and it's just Miller.
Yeah,
he doesn't call Millar, but it's
spelled with an A though, right?
Yeah, it is spelled with an A. But he
and I know that, and I still do it.
Yeah,
I
because it's hard not to.
Yeah.
But on that note, since we started talking about geeky comic book stuff, I'm gonna say we are back, and this time, I wrote down here the triumvirate. Of passionate pop passionate pop culture promoters. That is myself, John, and Bombcast J are here to talk about all things comic related. If you haven't seen my little teaser earlier on Instagram,
I didn't see it.
It's got like 1,000 views.
Really?
are popular.
I think it's that Reels. It's their version of TikTok.
Yeah.
Hashtag everything. It gets everywhere. You know. So, we're back with the PC Bombcast presents a pop culture comic pod. Say that 3 times fast.
No, I don't want to.
Since I've introduced you, say hello to everybody, Bender.
Hey guys, what's going on?
It's been a while.
Long time no see.
We definitely made fun of you in the way that you weren't going to be here.
I listened.
You go, hey Bender, you want to do something today? What are you thinking of doing, Jeremy? I don't know. Maybe go and grab a cheeseburger. Yeah, that sounds good. I can't make it.
No. It's always like a soft maybe, and then like 20 minutes later, the reality of I can't make all of my things go in the direction that I want, and I'm out.
Or I've got nothing going on, so I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Or what time are you guys thinking about doing it? 8, and 8:30 works better. Okay, we'll do 8:30. Well, I still can't do it.
That extreme. Look, the boy's got practice 5 days a week for volleyball, and then he's got soccer 2 days a week. I'm in class, and then I got a 2 and a 6-year-old. Life is hard.
I think that I can only speak for Jay on this, because I know he doesn't know you quite as well as I do, but you have no class, Bender.
No.
But we're happy to have you back, and we're happy to have you back on a comic book episode. And I guess, Jay, nobody's been missing you because you've been on every week.
Yeah.
You can at least say hi to everybody.
Hey, everybody.
This
due to your finger, by the way. Was that covered?
I dislocated my thumb a few weeks ago, and it keeps popping in and out. Nice. So.
I meant to bring it up on the last episode because it was certainly like
that. I didn't think I heard
this is what's weird about that hand, though. It'll go a week without being wrapped, and then a week with wrapped. And then, so either he's got a bum thumb, or he is really bad at trying to grab attention instead of anyway.
Someone told me I might have a fracture. That's why he keeps popping out.
It sounds plausible. Have you went to a doctor?
No, I haven't.
Okay,
I've done it before, like 10 years ago. So
yeah,
I just play through it.
Yeah, we drank, therefore we can guess we know things.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, we're gonna start again. Like I said, this is an episode of our comic pod. We're gonna start with easily for at least the last 9 weeks. the thing that has dominated pop culture and comic books in an aspect of jumping from the funny pages to the small screen, and that is WandaVision. At this point, as we're sitting here, WandaVision is completely done. And I guess what I want to ask you guys, now that it's all said and done, I've got three questions for you, and I don't really mean you to answer them in this order or even answer them this way, but what have we learned? What have we loved? And what did we just kind of like about the show? And I'll start with you, Bender.
What did I learn?
Boy, you're stumped.
Yeah,
and,
I don't know.
And by that, I mean, what did you think? You don't have to get into all that stuff.
No, I thought it was good. I really enjoyed everything. I thought the last episode was fine. I think the internet created so many expectations that they couldn't live up to them, and it probably wouldn't have made sense if you really think about it to live up to all of those.
I think more than any show that Marvel has done or anything Marvel has done so far, they gave us plenty of time to theorize what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I even put it in my notes, none of the theories happened.
No, right. Almost none of them. And
the only theory that happened I saw was who the big bad is, and she wasn't really the big bad. Agatha Harkness, who was the neighbor, played very well by Catherine Hahn.
Yeah.
Very, very well. She wasn't the big bad. Wanda was the big bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And she was also the hero. So she is the MCU's first anti-hero. Mm-hmm. She beat Punisher to the punch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the whole crazy weird episodes, you know, TV sitcom thing worked well, and I think the week to week thing really did work in its favor.
Yeah, and I'll lay down one ground rule. After we're done chit chatting about it for a little bit, we will give our overall rating of it. Mm-hmm. So let's hold off on that. But Disney Plus, they've created must see Friday TV with Mandalorian and this. In fact, It's worked so well for them, and the shows have been done so well. Everybody seems to forget the Netflix style of just releasing it all at once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's been great.
Amazon did the same thing with The Boys. The Boys is weekly as well.
Yeah, they released three right up front, and then it went weekly. And I think they're doing the same thing with Invincible coming soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that. But what about you, Jay?
Yeah, I loved it. The same way, I thought the finale was okay. I think the weekly thing kind of hurt them because it got people's expectations up so high, which is something we've never had with anything Marvel before.
It certainly allowed us to just our imaginations to run rampant. And
Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, I think the first four episodes were fucking out of the sight television. Just great television. I think the next three episodes were good, still good. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think Kat Dennings and I can't think of the comic relief in every movie he's been in, Agent Wu. He was awesome. I think those two were awesome. And I think that though the final two episodes just left me wanting something.
I thought the emotional exposure in episode 8 was very strong.
I did put on here that for the finale, the things that worked well for me was emotionally, I think it worked well. Yeah. I think the relationship between Vision and Wanda worked well. And I think the best scene in the final 3, 4, 5, even last night, was Vision versus Vision.
Yeah, that was a good fight.
Not just the fight, but how it ended was awesome.
Yeah.
It gave us...
I meant to look up that question and actually read into it, but I ran out of time.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's a real real theory,
Well, and so the go-to with every TV show from Big Bang to every movie has always been Occam's Razor.
Yeah.
And they kind of gave us a different thing to latch onto in storytelling wise.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Yeah.
And we saw Vision cry. That was cool. I mean, it was. Yeah. There were things to like. I also put here post-credit scenes. I thought they were okay. Think we all knew that the Monica Rambeau was going to join up with Nick Fury and Sword at some point.
It's just that Captain Marvel 2, there was just a lead-in for that.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. And then also, and I've complained about this so much in the past, every time, and you know, like I've said, anytime Marvel introduces a new character to us, they up how powerful the character is.
Yeah.
Well, now what they did in this one was just take an old character And, well, actually, she's even more powerful than the Sorcerer Supreme. You don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that. You can just be powerful in your own. You don't have to be more. And, you know, because here's, you know, now she's pulling her own Stephen Strange, and she's going through.
Reading the book, but she's cognitive while she's doing it.
Yeah, they're doing stuff that she shouldn't be able to do because she doesn't know how to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Unless she read the first few, maybe she skipped ahead to a chapter or something in the book.
Do they give a time frame on that? She could. I don't remember if they gave a little time frame.
No, they didn't. And I'm fine with her learning to use her magic, and I'm fine with that leading into the Doctor Strange movie. But I told somebody on Facebook, I go, I get everybody, and I hate when people bitch about this, and that's run rampant. The whole thing felt like a setup for the new Doctor Strange movie. Well, no shit, fuck faces. That's what we knew it
and
was.
And Captain Marvel, too.
Every fucking Marvel movie is to set up something. That's the whole reason for post-credit scenes.
Yeah.
Especially these shows when the theaters have been dead for a year. Like, they're gonna, like, these shows are intended to lead to heavy hitters, so you go to the box office.
Exactly. So that didn't bother me at all. I just felt they were just, I mean, maybe because they were too painfully obvious that they were coming. Maybe that's what fell flat for me. Still pretty good. I even put on here, I put Samsonite. I was way off of all the theories.
Yeah.
The one that we went around the interwebs the most was Mephisto. I'm so fucking glad it wasn't Mephisto.
Yeah, I don't. Everything I've ever read with him in it, I have not enjoyed.
See, the only thing I feel they missed out on was having Billy and Tommy come back later, because Mephisto was responsible for that in the comic.
No, like in that extended scene though, she hears him again. So we don't definitely.
Yeah, so she could do something with the dark.
She might pull him from another multiverse or
level
another dimension
of hell with Mephisto. Or something. The only mention in the whole thing of Doctor Strange was that one time, which was kind of a bummer to me. And I would like them to explain in the Doctor Strange movie why this influx of power
is unnoticed.
Is unnoticed by Doctor Strange. Or even maybe, what's his name? Who's going to be the bad guy?
Mordo.
Mordo. Yeah, Mordo. Or maybe him.
Yeah.
And he gets there first, and that could have been a good. I mean, there's a lot of things that could have worked.
I think it's the chaos magic thing is like a different spectrum of magic outside of their expertise.
In the comics, it was because they called it chaos magic because Wanda herself was not a magic user.
Right.
It was her mutant ability that allowed her to access magic, which was she was the only creature that he'd ever seen. And that's why Agatha helps teach her to use magic, and Doctor Strange helps lecture her from time to time in the comics. But he even said, he goes, the reason she's so, you know, she's essentially just raw power, and the reason she can't control it is because she was never meant to control it.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know.
They've kind of retconned that in the comics, too, now, and her mom was a Scarlet Witch before her, and I read, I pulled it up, I just read the James Robinson Scarlet Witch Volume 1, Witch's Road. I don't know if you guys read that.
I haven't yet. It's
pretty good. It's basically, she basically pulled a WandaVision and fucked a bunch of stuff up, and she's trying to make life better by going around and fixing things magic in the magic verse. Yeah. And the main bad guy in the first arc
is the magic verse an official Marvel
guy. But the main bad guy in this very first one out of the gate is he's like the Emerald Warlock or whatever. So I guess everybody's got a color. But Agatha Harkness is dead in this and follows her around as like a spirit.
Okay.
So I think WandaVision was kind of setting up like either a movie or a show that kind of follows along the same similar path.
Or at least tying it to something that's relevant and new. And by the way, James Robinson's just a fantastic DC or comic book writer.
I don't know what else I've read of
him. He cut his teeth on Starman on DC.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's great.
Justice Society.
Justice Society. A lot of great. He loves, and I could see where he would be good on Scarlet Witch because he loves those times past kind of stories where he can talk about the history of things.
Yeah.
Like, really, really like dark oriental magic art kind of history of things. He's like, he very much probably designed the store where Mogwai was bought in. That's James Robinson.
And like Cards on the Table, I thought it was just an all right story, but I could see like where they were getting, the writers were probably pulling some of that in WandaVision. After reading this, I'm like, okay, they're kind of, this is where they're pulling some of this from.
And that was one of my issues, is they pulled so many different things from comics. That's where everyone started coming up with the theories. Like, the White Vision was...
Yeah. Well, the White Vision was... He's in this, too, because they do a little bit of a flashback, and he is, like, a remade version with no memories or whatever. Yeah,
John Byrne created that, and I want to jump to that real quick,
because that was Kang that was responsible for him being made. So that was something I brought up last week.
I want to jump to that, too, to the all the different things they pulled from, because something else was going on in the show, and leave it to the interwebs to start pointing it out. The... Special thanks to have been kind of evolving in the credits. Mm-hmm. There have been a number of creators listed throughout it. I'm not going through all of them, but I'm going to say Kirby and Lee were credited. Mm-hmm. Oliver Copiel was credited, you know, and he's real famous for drawing the modern version of the twins, Wiccan. And Bendis and Finch, Whedon and Cassidy, Tom King, Alan Heinberg, and Jimmy Chung. So many. I mean, if you can Google it, because there's articles written on it. Mm-hmm. And really, the reason the articles were written on it, because it wasn't until the last episode where they credited John Byrne.
Yeah.
Who, and just so you know, John Byrne created the White Vision. He created the fake twins, and he turned Agatha as the mentor for. Mm-hmm. So the majority of what this has got going was John Byrne created. For some reason, he was not credited throughout the whole thing until the end.
Maybe that was the reason. Maybe if you would have credited him early, people would have been like, White Vision's coming.
Well, shouldn't we? I mean, when you saw the twins and Agatha, you should have, you know.
I guess, yeah.
And here's an argument against anything they did. For a good chunk of the middle of it, they credited Jim Shooter, who was the CEO or the publisher for Marvel Comics throughout the 80s, who literally contributed nothing to it. The internet started asking questions, well, why is Jim Shooter on here? So they pulled him for the last two.
Yeah.
He was no longer on it. They didn't pull people's names off. They just added to it. It was like, it's, I don't know. It's almost like they were doing things on the fly.
And
it's weird. It's just weird to do that with your special thanks to. I like where your head's at. Like, they only added people's things as those parts of the story popped up.
Yeah.
But from day one, Scarlet Witch was really made famous by John Byrne.
Yeah.
So, you know, in fact, a significant things about the Avengers that we know today is John Byrne, you know, I mean, so, and George Perez, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just really weird. You know, I guess we can, let's, overall though, as a show, and we'll get into our ratings here in just a second, what were some other things that, I don't know, really stuck out or really, you really, really liked about the show? Or hated. I don't care. Hated. We'll start over here with you there, Jay.
All right. I didn't care for Haywood. I thought he was just kind of a bland villain.
Very thin.
Yeah.
Just somebody to fill a spot.
Yeah, and that's where I was hoping Kang would have came in, pulling his strings, setting it up for the...
That'd have been a better post-credit scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the veil pull off, like he fades into something else and says, well, this plan didn't work, and then he snaps out of the timeline.
Or even he disappeared onto the Jeep and you don't see him again until the post credit scene, it revealed it's him.
Yeah. Something like that. That would be cool. Yeah. Anything else?
I really liked the runes going up in the battle.
That was cool, and I had to watch that scene over again later because they did a really good job. For one, my first thought was it was still, and I love the flashback to Age of Ultron where she walked up beside her and whispered in her ear. That was really cool. And I thought, well, this whole fight's in her head.
Yeah.
But, and it wasn't. What it was is, so you see her miss her. They actually don't, they show it.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch the fight again, they show her hitting the walls and putting the runes on it.
Yeah.
You just don't realize that time. You think she's just missing.
She's just dumping power, you think.
Yeah, but no, I mean, that was a really well-done fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Madeline was the one that picked it up in her house. She's like, oh, she's making the runes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That was clever. That was a nice callback. I tell you this, a lot of people, you know, I think you and I even talked, and I wish I would have, on the last episode, and I wish we would have kind of brought it up then, when we were like, you know, we don't know that Agatha's a bad guy. She could be, eventually be her mentor. And they did leave that open.
I think she will be.
But she is a bad guy, because she did kill all those witches on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh,
there's no redeeming that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, same as Wanda, she did torture a bunch of people, and apparently left a kid locked in a
bedroom.
All the kids.
Yeah, all the kids are like locked in bedrooms
until the Halloween episode, and then they even bring it up. You know, okay, I guess one thing that was disappointing to me of all the theories that didn't happen, the one slight bitch I have about this, The only theory, and I do credit Matt F. Basler, friend of the show, Matt Basler, because he talks to me all the time via message after he watches them. I do credit him. He goes, so I guess I could have been Quicksilver? Like, yeah. anyone yeah. just, like, I, you know, I get that she was quote-unquote tricking her, but it was so awesome that it was Evan Peters' character yeah. coming yeah. in, and that could have been something great for the Marvel Universe. And it just, the first die had been cast, you yeah. know? But what I find hard to believe is not only did she create this person, she imbued him with powers of speed.
I'm guessing it was in that necklace he was wearing that controlled.
Yeah. But he used know how to use them well.
Yeah.
He had all the memories of Pietro, at least.
Or made up ones.
He didn't really
have her memories because, like, it could have been Wanda's memories. He would say things, though, and she'd be like, there was, I think it was episode 5 or 6. He says something about, like, something they ate her back then, and she's like, oh, I don't remember that. And he's like, the trauma.
Oh, maybe I'd yeah. miss that. And, yeah. and the memories he did have were just hers.
Yeah, it was, yeah. I guess, what she meant.
It was
up.
A letdown that he was not. He was not Quicksilver.
It was a letdown, yeah. and it was also kind of like a fuck you to, like, the internet fans, like, making things up. They made his last name Boner. Like,
yeah. yeah. Well, because the director of the show, who did all 9 episodes, was a child actor, and he was on Growing Pains.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He was on
Boner Kevin's... Boner Stabone.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, yeah. okay.
He was on Kevin Smith's podcast That's and funny. Talking about it.
Yeah, he was also one of, in as far as TV goes, even though... Kirk Cameron's grown up to be a militant Christian and mm-hmm. kind of an extremist. That show was great, yeah. and the episode where Boner goes to the military and dies is one of the saddest episodes in all of sitcomdom. You know how, I know this know. Week, on I a very special
remember
episode
much about Growing Pains.
Of Growing Pains.
I remember
Boner Stabone dies. You know?
Yeah, no, I don't remember much about Growing Pains at all.
I'm older.
Yeah, like, that's true.
The other thing they said was originally they were going to do the first 3 episodes on the first day, and that's where you get... Monica thrown out of the bubble.
Yeah, it was a good choice. Yeah. It was yeah. a good choice to push it a week.
Yeah. They thought they might lose people if they didn't do the 3 together.
Yeah.
But I think it worked out pretty well for
them. Yeah, because they released them to the critics, the first 3 all in a yeah. row to the critics. So the critics knew.
And what they did well, like, every Friday was... And I thought this was kind of annoying because then you couldn't click on anything. But, like, Twitter was covered in, like, WandaVision stuff and, like, theories and, like,
yeah,
like had... Ant-Man's churning for no fucking reason. I'm like, oh, it's Paul Rudd in this episode. I haven't watched it yet. And then War Machine was churning one day. And I'm like, why?
I feel like Matt Basler knew that I think I probably talked to him about it and knew that I didn't watch it until after Missy was off work so we could watch it together, because he would send me a random message that was completely wrong about what was going on.
That's great.
I guess let's go ahead and we'll get into it. So overall, being the first Marvel, the first official MCU TV series, what was our ratings on it? And I went to Jay first. So I'll go to you first, Bender. What's your...
I give it a solid 4. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I think there's some things it could have done better, but I thought it was extremely well acted by all characters.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt there.
And I really want to see more Jimmy Woo stuff. Like,
yeah, I want him to be somebody.
Like, apparently he's back in Ant-Man.
Well, okay. Oh, what a perfect...
I don't want him to just be, like, the next Agent Coulson, though. Like, I want him to have, like, a real thing.
But what a good role, though, to be in Ant-Man next to Paul Rudd. And,
yeah.
And what's the Hispanic actor who's fucking great?
I know you're talking
Luis.
About.
Luis.
Who's
Michael Pena?
Yeah, Michael Pena, who's a great serious actor, a great comedic actor. Yeah. He's awesome.
He's not great in Tom and Jerry, but he's probably the best part of Tom and Jerry.
I asked Jay, did you hear the Tom and Jerry thing over the weekend? A good chunk of the country, when turning on Tom and Jerry over the weekend, got to watch the 4-hour cut of Justice League.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, they accidentally loaded it up in its place.
Accidentally, quote unquote.
Yeah, they caught it, but they said half the people that went to watch Tom and Jerry at that point on that Saturday or Sunday, whatever it was, mm-hmm. got to see some of the Justice League before it was caught.
That's cool.
I told him it was like on Friends when Chandler and Joey got porn. When they
don't turn it off.
Yeah, don't turn it off. For 4 hours, I know you said it's time for school, but we're stuck here. What did you think overall?
I'd probably give it a solid 4.25.
Okay.
And one of the things they did that I didn't mention was they developed those secondary characters very well. Jimmy Woo, Darcy.
Yeah.
Monica Rambeau.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my biggest. I'm sorry. I know we're going to swing back, but she didn't really get to do anything. I wanted to see some real. I don't know if she's figuring them out as they're going, yeah. but like, I wanted to see her like.
The
I don't know, punch that guy or something, yeah. you know, into the sun, like, oops.
Yeah.
Before I give my rating, I will give my one thing I didn't list on here, but as I think about it, the biggest disappointment for this whole show for me is that Monica Rambeau will not lead to a Next Wave TV series.
Yes. Oh, no.
Oh, that's not out yet?
Yeah,
come on.
I just don't think that they're going to take her in that direction.
What if season two?
Oh, yeah. That would be so good. That would be so good. And we've talked on here. I think it was you and Matt, my episode where Bloodstone, like, I've got the comic book hots for her.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think it's her choker. No.
She's been in Deadpool recently.
Yeah, you,
really
good there. You told me that. Yeah. So 4.25.
Yeah.
So I gave it a 4. For what I said on Facebook and for my thoughts on the finale, which was not, I mean, finale, I'd give like a 3.75 out of 5.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the show as a whole was awesome. In fact, the TV stuff, the sitcom stuff was so good. I don't know if you've seen, there's a new show coming out. I think it's Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
And it's,
I couldn't think of what it's called,
it's
though.
The girl from Schitt's Creek. Mm-hmm. I Can't Fucking Stand Kevin is the name of the show.
Is it a show or is it a movie?
No, it's a TV series.
Okay.
And it's a sitcom when she's around her husband, like a cheesy 80s or 90s, like everybody loves Raymond style sitcom.
Yeah.
But when she goes to another room, reality hits and it's dark and she plots to murder him. Yeah. She can't stand him. And like everything in it is like, you know, she drops something. Huh, must be the woman hands. Oh, and a laugh track. So it's done from two different, like a TV version and the real life version, where she's like an adulterer and a drug addict and all this stuff. But she's Susie Homemaker when she's in the room with him and the kids.
So they greenlight that real quick, like 8 weeks ago?
Super quick.
That's what I was thinking too. Like right out of the gate, I was like, man, these guys saw the numbers on the first WandaVision, and they were like, go.
As much as I was a fan of Schitt's Creek, and Missy would have nailed her name for it. I forget the actress's name, but it's got big people attached to it. I mean, she is, she's riding a big high from being on that show. So, but it looks clever. But again, you have to think that WandaVision style of film or of telling a story has done it for it. So I'm excited about it. I like the show. I thought it was a great show. So unless you got any other closing thoughts.
Annie Murphy is her name.
Annie Murphy, yeah. Unless you got, and also smoking hot.
Yeah.
Whore in Schitt's Creek. Just a whore. And that's what made her even hotter.
She's the whore in like the first couple seasons.
It goes on because she cheats on the doctor. Then she comes back. Yeah. And then, so if we don't have anything else, we're going to do the comic.
I got one thing.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
So is this going to be a good thing with Falcon and Winter Soldier following it up? I mean, are we going to be let down? I mean, it's going to be a totally different show, I know.
My expectations are super high, and I think because it's such a different show, I think, and before we do jump to our next segment, you brought up something I did want to mention. I'm anxious to see if Falcon and Winter Soldier are more cinematic in style.
Yeah.
Because one thing, I guess they were talking to some Disney execs or some Marvel people, maybe Kevin Feige, I don't know who, maybe the director, and they were like, you know, our point is to tell still big stories, but on a smaller scale that we don't need to bring in all the big stars from the cinematic universe.
Yeah.
We don't need your...
'Cause then you have to pay them.
Well, yeah, and then but you also don't get a chance. I mean, they're developing Phase 4.
Yeah.
You know, they've got to find. I mean, Robert Downey, for all we know right now, is not coming back to play Tony Stark. We do know we got Chris Evans is going to come back at some point.
Last I heard, it was like maybe one more shot.
Yeah, and it might be. We don't even know to what extent.
Yeah.
We know Chris Hemsworth is Thor still, which and we know Mark Ruffalo is still going to be Hulk. So we got people, but they do need to develop other stars.
Yeah,
and you know, like you said, maybe a young Avengers is in the works or something.
I mean, it has to be with possibly her kids, and then Hawkeye coming. I guess after Loki is Hawkeye.
And Eli Bradley is supposed to show up in Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Okay.
Patriot.
Yeah.
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 Well, and
he's the bad guy, I think, or the anti-hero or whatever.
I don't know.
I thought he was
the Flag Smashers.
Oh, we'll find out.
I think he's supposed to be like the face of the government, like replacement of S.H.I.E.L.D. And he's
U.S. Agent.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's
right,
U.S.
Right,
agent.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And what we're getting what we're doing is kind of what they did with the in the phase one anyway. They did it with standalone movies.
Yeah.
And then they did the Avengers. I feel like what we're doing is we're developing these players in a longer format. And then we're going to get a new Avengers. Scarlet Witch as an Avenger is still a good thing.
Yeah.
The Falcon and Winter Soldier will still be a good thing. We know Loki's not going to be an Avenger, but Hawkeye can still be an Avenger.
Yeah. And I'm all right with like this smaller form origin story for some of these characters, especially like your more well developed characters. Like, you don't have to see it all.
Yeah,
over
we don't
again.
Need we yeah. don't need Spider Man and those type of characters.
Yeah, yet. Another yeah. one.
Yeah, but. So, all right, well, so I tasked you guys for the quote-unquote throw it to Missy segment, which I think you and I affectionately dubbed this as the letter column of our comic pod. I said I want you to bring at least one topic, because I figure if we all brought one topic, that would take us through at least 30 minutes of talk. Jay, since I went to Bender and Rating first,
all right.
I'll go to you first. What did you bring to the table?
So I finished X of Swords. I don't know if you guys have.
Okay, no.
I got 5 issues left.
Okay.
I haven't read it at all, so.
You do have the Marvel app, right?
I haven't actually downloaded
Get
it
Get that.
Yet.
Yeah.
I will. I started this class, and I don't want to pay for something I'm not going to be able to use.
That's true. It's cheaper annually, so it's a good deal.
It was okay. I think I'm getting kind of burnt out on
Hickman, we talked about.
Well, yeah, Hickman.
Hickman style.
Yeah, and just the big event, because you went straight from Empire into this, and now King in Black came out this week.
That's the Venom like the Venom stuff,
one,
right?
The one thing I like about King in Black is it's been developing for a long
time. Yeah, it's been
what Marvel used to do.
Yeah.
Here's what keep in mind, I'm not finished, and you can tell me you don't have to tell me any details, but hopefully the final sword fights it's worth it, the final round of it. But here's what I don't like about it, knowing where I'm at. Bender here grew up loving Marvel because Marvel's always done this. Their poster is heroes grounded in reality.
Right.
This X series, since Hickman's taken over, is not grounded in anything remotely close to reality.
No.
The fact that they can regrow mutants is a little silly now to me. At first, I was
takes
like,
all the stakes out of it.
Yeah, well, they kind of adjust the stakes in this series a little bit. And explain to me, this is a video game, very much a video game style scene that happens, reoccurring over and over. So all of this stuff's going on, and is it going on all simultaneously? Because are they just standing there with their swords and their symbols fucking scene?
Like, I don't know.
Waiting for someone to come in?
Every single issue ended with a new person there with their sword.
Yeah, every issue, you know, so we start with Wolverine. Wolverine's not the first. The first was Magic.
Is this like a Battle World type situation?
Well, it's kind of. It's Kuroka. There's another version of
Krakoa.
They're going to fight. Okay. They all have their champions.
Like the world is going to fight?
So,
what's her name? Saturnine? Or Saturnine?
Saturnine.
She's ungodly powerful.
Yeah.
And where'd that shit come from?
I don't know.
Stupid powerful.
Yeah.
Like, snap her fingers and I make you disappear forever powerful.
Okay.
But she likes rules. So.
So the gist was, originally, Krakoa was a bigger island.
Yes.
It was Krakoa and Arako.
That's it. That's right. Okay.
And it was long time ago, centuries ago.
It's so long ago it was Apocalypse and his children's war.
Yeah.
Okay. And they broke apart.
His wife and children went with Arako into this parallel dimension and held off these people that were trying to invade Earth.
And they fought them for millennia.
Yeah.
Like, constant war.
Okay.
And so now they're trying to come back. They've taken over all this stuff, and they're going to come back and take over the Earth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so Arako is like, or Krakoa is the last defense.
Yeah, okay. And so, but Saturnine.
Cool concept.
Well, yeah. Saturnine, she lays out the ground rules. Because she's not actually, it's not her invading.
No, okay. But they have to go through other worlds.
They have to go through her.
Okay.
Which, she's so super powerful, she can put an end to all of it. But what she instead comes up with the prophecy foretold, is your 12 best swords against their 12 best swords.
Okay.
And it's not even best swords. It was just like tarot cards that picked who was going to do it.
Well, a prophecy. It's not best because some of them aren't fighters. Yeah, like
Doug Ramsey.
Yeah. And
Cypher.
Yeah. But, but Magic, who obviously.
Yeah.
I think it's very cool, not because it's Wolverine, but because it's the blade that can kill him is his sword.
Oh, okay.
And he has to go to hell to get it. But so every issue for a good chunk of it is the story of who's taking up the sword for the good guys.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue finishes with them coming through the portal, and all previous issues, people are still standing there in their circle. Like, it's like a video game. It's like, okay. So they come
just
and put
waiting
their,
for your fighter.
Yeah. And so they all put their swords in their circle and wait for the next one So,
that is kinda weird.
It's 20, silly.
It was 22 issues, and the first half was them getting the swords.
It is.
And then the second half is pretty much the battles.
Yeah.
So,
and it's not even really all battles.
Yeah.
So Wolverine has to travel to hell to get his sword.
Matsumoto blade? Yeah, Matsumoto.
The one that's
blade.
Made from his soul?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And
he's not the only one getting it, because the other, his combatant is trying to get
it. He's trying to get it, okay. Because that sword maker's in hell making blades for the devil, or for
yeah, you know. The yeah. sword maker. So I guess before Hickman reset everything, I think it was Tom Taylor's run on X-23, or the new all-new Wolverine, where Laura took over. That ends with them, this like terrorist group, mm-hmm. killing all of like the Wolverine offsets, like the those guys with that blade that has been shattered, and they're building weapons out of it and killing everybody. And that whole thing comes to a head with her saying, and the terrorists aren't really all that bad; they're just victims of their fight. You know, people that they've killed before.
Oh, nature versus nurture thing.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Like, you killed my father, and she was like, "Look, I didn't have any control of what I did, but I'll fight for you now." And
so
they
rehash
the whole thing
of the Jason Aaron run.
Yeah. And it was pretty good. Like, I enjoyed it, but I'm like, and then they just redo everything. Like, I'll get the blade of hell. I don't like that.
Well,
they redid everything.
He doesn't have to die or anything, because you know, you plant one of these flowers and they can open a portal to anywhere, and he gets his way in there.
On top of that, even when they get shot by that blade or whatever, like they turn the blade into a bunch of bullets, and as long as the bullet's in their head, they're dead. But the moment you take the bullet out of their head, they fucking come back.
Well, that's the way the sword worked too. If it was stabbed in him, he was dead.
But if he took it out, he would come back. All right,
the adamantium bullet from Wolverine Origins.
The most intriguing character and the coolest character, I can't remember his name, but it was Wolverine's count. The guy he's going to fight, and they kind of like each other.
Okay,
but he's a tricky, devious piece of shit too, and he's in hell.
Is Nightcrawler in this?
He shows up in like the last issue, but he's not fighting.
He's not fighting. He's a swordsman.
Well, that was what he said. He's like, I fight with swords. Why was I not invited?
Yeah, because it's the prophecy had to foretell, which is kind of made up. The prophecy's kind of made up anyway. But it, you know, so you go ahead. I mean, I'll read it, and then I'm sure we'll talk about it as soon as I finish it. But give your review of it overall.
I, out of five, I'd probably give it 3.
Ooh, yeah. Not that that's a bad read. No. That's still a fun story to read.
It was a fun story, but it was just long at times.
Too long.
Yeah. 22 issues is a very long run.
22 issues, and I apologize because there's been so much great Hickman stuff in the past, but 22 issues of extra Hickman exposition and fucking novel pages and
I don't know what his Avengers run was, but it spread over like 9 trades.
It
I think
felt a lot like his Image Comics runs. His
like, and they start out so strong, and it's like you need somebody in the room to say no, stay. Like, he's like the George R. R. Martin of comic books. Just fucking stay focused. Yeah.
His first and third act are great. It's his second act that rambles on for a while, and I know that's going to raise the ire of a lot of people that are fans of Hickman, and you should be a fan of Hickman. He tells some good stories, but I think, we said this on the last episode, is I think his little narrative tools are played out a little bit. I don't need the infographs all the time. He doesn't need it. He tells a great, he does great dialogue and great story ideas. You don't need that.
And he's only doing like 3 of the X-Men books now, and all the books have those.
Yeah, even if it's not him, they're still in. Which he probably still wrote them.
Yeah, you know? Probably.
And I really didn't enjoy out of the gate House of X.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy out of the gate, so I haven't gone back. And the stuff I follow into it, nobody's dying to read a X-Men book right now. I do kind of want to read the Marauders, because that was the one that I read that I really enjoyed. And
that
I'll
was
go
good.
Back and read that.
Hellions is really good, too, with Sinister leading the team.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that one. The one I don't like the most is the Cable.
Cable's okay.
The Uncanny X-Force?
Is he running that one?
No. It's Young Cable.
He's got his own book.
Yeah, and One that I liked more than I expected is the New Mutants.
Yeah.
I like that. I like magic. It's another one I got the hots for.
Yeah.
A big sword. She like Japanese video game sword.
Yeah. See, my least favorite has been Excalibur. And it's dealt with all the other worlds.
I did not
stuff.
Like Excalibur. Yeah. It's, again, going back to what I said about... When I liked X-Men is they were doing their battles occasionally in space, but a lot of time in the real world.
Yeah.
This is not in the real world, and that Excalibur is the worst. And it's like British royalty with Captain Britain and all that bullshit. Oh, it's so boring.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make sense. Like, I want X-Men. When Hickman came back, I was like, maybe we're going to get some X-Men. And I shouldn't have been baited because I know Hickman's going to tell a crazy, all-spanning story. I just want X-Men. I want Wolverine fighting fucking drunks in bars, ninjas, and occasionally Magneto.
Yeah.
Things like that. I don't...
Yeah, you know. I would say that's like Marvel's biggest problem now. They took all their good, like, guys and made them good guys.
They're all on the island.
Yeah. Yeah, except for Doctor... Like, on the outside of X-Men, Doctor Doom is still an asshole.
Yeah. Doctor Doom's still Doctor Doom. I don't know. I'm going to finish it.
Yeah.
Again... And like you said, at times it's been a struggle. At times it's been real good. I think once I'm knee deep in the sword fighting, I'll be okay.
Yeah,
but it's a lot of work getting to that.
I get it,
and it's not all sword fighting.
Yeah, I get it too. Somebody's gonna play chess because they're gonna be clever. You know what I mean?
There's a drinking contest at one point.
Oh, that makes sense too. That's got to be Wolverine. Yeah,
that's
right?
Definitely Wolverine. Yeah.
Can he get drunk?
I don't think so.
He can in another world.
Oh, that's otherworld things make sense. Yeah, okay. So
because the resurrections don't work in otherworld either.
Okay.
If you
maybe
die in otherworld,
you stab yourself
you're...
in just the arm with the hellblade or whatever it is, he can get drunk.
You die in otherworld, you stay dead.
No,
that's right.
They can bring you back, but it's from a different reality.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when a minor character
could be kind of interesting.
Yeah, a minor character's killed in the first episode or first issue,
and he comes back as like a mangled. Deformed version of himself that has no ability to communicate.
Interesting.
Yeah. That was kind of cool. Yeah. To me, that was actually a bright spot for me because I was like, we're going to be done regrowing mutants. Great.
Yeah.
Now there's stakes again. But, all
for
right.
22 issues.
Let's 22 fucking issues. All right, Bender, what'd you bring to the
I brought a lighter one that was real easy. You probably don't, but Spider-Man's my favorite.
Yeah.
I
read a lot of almost everything Spider-Man that I can get my hands on, and I think Dan Slott did a pretty good job, and I think Nick Spencer's run is fine. It's okay. I don't love it. I don't hate it. But I read they just released actually they just released the second one. I haven't gotten it yet, but Tom Taylor's Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man.
Who's Tom Taylor?
It's Tom, right?
Tom King?
No,
Taylor. What is he wrote? I'm not familiar with him. Go ahead. Keep going.
Anyways, it's a fucking joy. Like, it's just back to the basics. Spider-Man taking care of his neighborhood. His roommate is Boomerang, trying to reform Boomerang, but he's a terrible fucking human being.
He wrote Deceased.
Yeah.
And Injustice.
Yes, he did.
Okay. Deceased, you and I talked. That's a good standalone
story.
It
is a very good standalone story. He's done some good stuff, and I believe he's the one that was a CIA agent.
He's Australian.
Maybe he wasn't then. Maybe it was the other Tom. Anyways, this one, the stakes are a lot lower to a degree. Spider-Man is helping a neighbor in his building, and she's being tracked by her grandfather, who is... There's an Under York, which is a whole other
underneath,
version of New York.
Kind
of
like London Underground, only in New York. Okay.
Yeah. So he's helping them out... he goes into Under York. They introduce like a new superhero called Rumor. She's an old Asian woman. I haven't gotten to the point where they give her a backstory origin, but she's super powerful.
Is she at all connected to the Rumor from Umbrella Academy?
No. She just punches hard.
Okay.
She punches hard. But apparently she stayed in the shadows because like growing up and I think she's Chinese. She couldn't be a woman superhero or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyways, a lot of fun, but like... His interactions with the town and the neighborhood, like he saves a little girl in the very like first like five or six panels, and he's swinging her back, and he sets her down and gives her to her dad, and she's like, spider on his chest, and smacks it.
Just
and his dad's like,
funny little jokes.
Yeah, yeah, he's okay. Like, I'm sorry. He's like, it happens more than you'd think. Hindsight,
which
I probably should have
which is why you want Spider-Man. Yeah. And it is Peter Parker, right?
Yeah, it's okay. Peter Parker. And, like, there's one where a police officer gives him his card, and he's like, oh, thanks. And he just sticks it in his spandex. She goes, you're just gonna keep that in your pants? He's like, I don't have pockets. It's a problem more often than you'd think. And so then they call it back, like, 4 issues later, he calls her, and he's like, hey, I got your number from my pants.
So is this like an all-ages book? Or
Yeah. I mean, it's not too heavy.
Is it
rated T for teen or whatever.
But yeah. Is it part of the continuity of the
normal 616? Yeah, it is part of the continuity 616. It's just like the Amazing Spider-Man is like high stakes, always on the, and this one is just lower level. It's more personal stakes, I guess you would say. Like, he's trying to help his neighbor or his roommate, Boomerang.
In a way, what made Fraction's Hawkeye run so good.
Yes, yeah. There is some heavy stuff in it. Like, he's still trying to figure out him and Mary Jane or MJ are back together. Still trying to figure that out. Because
the Mephisto divorce didn't take.
No, it did not take.
16 times.
Aunt May has some really bad news in this one that's pretty heavy to hit. And then the last issue, which is, I think it was like a, it might have been a Free Comic Book Day run or some sort of giveaway thing. But it starts out where he's fighting the Sinister Six, like the old version of the Sinister Six, Fat Doc Ock and everything. And he's got a teammate with that I'd never heard of. It was called Spider Bite, and it's just like his younger kid. And you go through like this whole fucking battle, and then like the last 4 pages is a kid in a Make-A-Wish thing, and like you just like, oh my god, it's so good! Like, just choke up a little bit after you're reading it.
So the most important question is, Aunt May like Marissa Tomei hot, or is it still old lady Aunt May?
Old lady. Like,
they haven't retconned that yet.
They didn't retcon that. She still married Jay Jameson's father, and then he died, and then
she bangs Dr. Octavius.
That was way back in the day. Doc Ock, when he took him over.
Yeah, Vulture. Yeah, she's got around, man. Ho. I don't mind Aunt May ho when it's Marissa Tomei.
Yeah. Aunt May looks like you're 2.5 feet in the grave. you get yours though. You do your thing.
So what is a worse retcon tool in the history of comics? And I'm going back to kind of like our wizard days here of when they would beat a dead horse. Was it Mephisto divorce or Superboy punch? You remember Superboy punch?
Yeah.
Superboy punch was the one that destroyed the 52 universes.
Oh, okay.
Punched a hole through the barrier of reality.
Okay. Yeah.
He became Superboy Prime and wearing the monitor armor and being a bad guy.
It's got to be that. That was just Superboy so convoluted.
Punch, like, what retcon is worse? Superboy Punch is the worst.
So, Doctor Strange actually makes an appearance in Spider-Man. Asks him a question about, the thing that's going on with Aunt May. And he's like, there's no magic that doesn't come with consequences. You can make a deal with a demon, but it might be worse. Like, so they kind of call back to
it. Yeah, a little Mephisto thing, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was pretty good.
How many issues?
That's just the first 6. I mean, it's a continuing series.
So,
but
it's still going.
If you stopped reading it there, it would wrap up on its own.
I haven't seen it on the Marvel apps.
It's the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man by Tom Taylor.
I think I've seen that.
Have you?
Yeah.
The Amazing Spider-Man is still like the heavy hitter run. Yeah, where
coming out almost every week now.
Yeah. It's exhausting.
How many times throughout history has Spider-Man done that?
Yeah.
A shit ton.
Well, not only that, they're doing .1 issues that are dealing with like the spider family.
Stop it. Stop it. All right, well, I'll jump to mine. Speaking of coming out weekly and how annoying that is, I'm gonna go complete opposite end of the spectrum.
Okay,
how about you how about we charge up the Wayback Machine, you guys jump in, and we're gonna take a ride all the way back to April of 1998. So April of 1998, a little bitty book by a very unknown artist, and I say that because he might be the last superstar artist, debuted on the Diamond charts at number 7, which was 700 and something thousand copies. That's a shit ton of copies. Comics don't do that anymore. But it was Joe Madureira's Battle Chasers number 1.
And I don't know what this is. No idea.
Okay, well, so Battle Chasers number 1 came out, and eventually it was 13 on the charts. It peaked, the original run peaked with the 7th issue, peaked at number, or issue number 4 peaked at number 7 on the charts. So Battle Chasers, when I say Battle Chasers sold, I worked at a comic shop. Battle Chasers was as big as X-Men and everything. People were asking for it. It would go through its up and downs in terms of delays. In fact, it was often delayed for the first 9 issues. In fact, from 98 to 2001, we saw 9 issues. We didn't see another issue past 9. Joe Madureira went off to go start his own video game company. He since in 2017 came out with Battle Chasers Night War, a kickstarted, crowdfunded video game, which my buddy Dwayne says is great. And at that point, he said he was going to come out with Battle Chasers again one day when the book, when the game was done. That was not 2017. Here we are in 2021. 20 years later, he posted on his Instagram a picture of Gully that said Battle Chasers. People got excited. And then the next day, he followed it up and he said, thanks, even though he can't do it himself because of his schedule, Ludo Lullaby, which look his art up, he is a clone of Madureira, but he's awesome, will be drawing issues 10 through 12, which will be out later this year. 20 years apart, we are finally getting closure to Battle Chasers, at least the original series.
So is it going to be Image?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I don't. Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. Hopefully, if it helps him get it published. Yeah. Number 10, issue 10 is going to be a 32-page supersize issue coming out later this year. It will be out to the people that kickstarted the video game.
Yeah.
So they're going to get first crack at it. What I'm going to tell you guys is I've read Battle Chasers probably 1,600 times in my life. All
with
9
no
issues.
No ending?
With no ending. You could go back. It doesn't age well because Red Monica is the most giant set of cans yes. you've ever seen in the history of comics. It's not necessarily the most. In fact, it may be my favorite comic. It's almost like George R. R. Martin for me. Okay. I tell people all the time that the Song of Fire and Ice are the most poorly written books I love.
Yeah.
This is a very simple story. But it's a very simple story that I absolutely cling on every fucking beautifully drawn panel, well-written dialogue.
This is so friggin' 2000, like 90, like 90s.
And I've been asking myself, especially when I told you that we absolutely, when this news came out, we had to do a comic pod. I've been asking myself, why do I love this comic book so much? And I think the answer is pretty simple. It even if it was silly because it was a late 90s book into the 2000s, it was a very honest and genuinely loved approach to high fantasy and steampunk from a guy that did nothing more than love Dungeons & Dragons as a kid.
Yeah.
It's not a Dungeons & Dragons property. It's not a Pathfinder property. It's an original property that he put a lot into. Garrison, the main guy, you barely see it in the comic, but you know he's the ultimate badass. Gully with the big gloves who has her dad's powers. She's the strongest character in it. You have Birdo, I think it's his name. You have to forgive me. I can't remember the robot's name. Oh, Caliburdo. He's a steampunk robot that is a great fighter and strong in his own right with a bunch of weapons. But if it rains, he's fucked. Because he's a tin man, you know? And then I can't remember the wizard's name, but...
I've seen pictures of this.
Nolan.
It looks cool.
Oh, it's unbelievably cool. I said this just a second ago. I believe that Joe Madureira was the last of the megastar artists. We certainly have great artists like Hitch and Jimmy Chung and Olive Cobiel. Yeah. And I mentioned earlier from the Joe Mad School of Art, Francis Manapul. There's certainly been a lot of great artists in the world, but and I think one key factor on why he was the last superstar artist, and Bender, you'll geek out over this, he was the guy that really, really gave us X-Men, Apocalypse, Age of Apocalypse, which was a mega book.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And he was the X-Men artist at the time. And he just... He was, you know, for another generation's Jim Lee.
I was like, I've seen this art.
Yeah,
like, I know this art.
Yeah, because Age of Apocalypse is maybe still my favorite X story of all time.
Yeah.
And that's...
It's a lot of fun.
There's a lot of good X stories out there, but that's my favorite.
Yeah.
Other than Joss Whedon's run, but which wasn't a big event. That was a big...
That was just Whedon's, a standalone book.
Yeah, Whedon's run aside... Big events. It was Age of Apocalypse.
Man, talk about a guy who's fallen from grace.
Is there a more cringeworthy book than that? Because Warren Ellis took over after him.
Oh, man, it got ugly.
Yeah,
it got ugly.
But just for creators?
Yeah, creator from Whedon to Ellis. Yeah, tough. That's a tough crowd to do. Yeah. But so again, this story absolutely led in a giant cliffhanger with issue 9. Not even a cliffhanger. It wasn't a cliffhanger. It was the Battle Chasers came together finally in issue 9. What would be the team? Red Monica finally became part of the team.
What's the elevator pitch for what this story is?
It's all about these gauntlets that Guppy has. They were her dad's. Her dad and Garrison were the two big heroes of the world of their Game of Thrones type kingdom.
Okay.
When he died, Garrison kind of went off and became a sulking, quote unquote, drunk because his wife died.
Mm-hmm.
Gully puts the gloves on when they're trying to some werewolves try to take them.
Mm-hmm.
She puts them on, and she's the only person that can use them, and she beats the shit out of these werewolves, but it causes her to pass us out. This brings Garrison out of retirement. They all try to protect her, and there's all kinds of political intrigue trying to plot against and take these gloves from her. And it's just very high fantasy. I mean,
yeah, it sounds
high
fantasy. Yeah, it sounds good.
And I have them. I was telling Jay before the episode, I have the hardcover, the original hardcover, and I also have the single issues. And there's a slipcase hardcover that I kicked myself that I didn't buy back in 2017, maybe around there, because now it's going from anywhere from $300 to $450.
Nice. Not that you'd ever sell it, though.
No, the slipcase. I don't have it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to get it. It's going to be got. Because it's got the original 9. It's got all of his sketches, character designs. Yeah. And it's got his script and how he came up with the idea. I guess he's writing it. I guess. I don't know. He didn't really.
You would hope so, right?
Yeah, I hope so. But Dusty, my friend of the show, wrote our original and still best theme song, The Dean of Rap. He harumphs every time I post about it because he's like, I'll fucking believe it when I see it. It was like anytime when Warren Ellis came back to write Wildstorm again.
Yeah.
And our Stormwatch or Wildcats. He came back and watched Wildcat. He was like, yeah, I'm excited about this. And then only one issue came out. And he's like, the way he looks at this, he goes, I'll fucking believe it when it happens.
So with this, are we going to get new Danger Girl too then eventually?
Yeah. So and he says that because originally J. Scott Campbell, and I've got the slipcase of Danger Girl over there. It's a fucking great book and it looks beautiful. J. Scott Campbell and Joe Mad created what was called the Cliffhanger imprint underneath Wildstorm.
Uh-huh.
And that's where the first 4 or 5 issues of it came out.
Yeah.
And then he moved over to Image. And then I tell you what, some good. J. Scott Campbell, even though he ended up turning over the reins to other people, like Phil Noto did a Danger Girl series, and it was one of the most beautifully drawn things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Phil Noto has a very simple but effective style of art. That cliffhanger put out some good stuff.
They did.
They were like, everything you loved about the Uncharted comic or video games was what Cliffhanger did for like comic books.
They had one other core book out, didn't they, at the time?
I can't remember. Those were the two that created it.
Yeah.
I can't remember what else it would have been. Yeah, check it out. I don't know, but I'm super jazzed. I don't know. It's the like you said, 1998. I mean, think about that. I was 20 years old.
Yeah,
this was my wheelhouse.
That's awesome.
20 year old, and that's the maybe reason I love the book so much is because every time I look at his art and read that book, I'm 20 again.
Yeah,
and that's what I love about it.
Oh, it was Crimson.
Oh, Crimson, that was Umberto Ramos. Yeah. Yeah, that was a
vampire
that,
book.
That went for a long time. That book had a good life.
I think it only went 20 issues.
But, well,
I had them
all.
That's
pretty long for an independent comic.
And remember, they're often delayed.
That's true.
Yeah.
20 issues from Cliffhanger could have been 7 years.
Yes.
But yeah, that was a big book. That book sold well, too. Yeah. I mean, so that's all I brought with it. That was my big comic book thing for the day. I mean, we got enough time. We can do some quick hits if anybody else any of those.
Quick hit. Did either of you finish Daredevil on Netflix?
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Man, I just did. Like, it fell off my radar once they, you know, Marvel took it over and they canceled it. But then, like, the whole he might be in Spider-Man re-upped it for me. I was like, I'm going to give it a shot. I burned through it in, like, 3 days.
Daredevil underrated.
Yeah.
It was so good.
It was.
Well, Vincent D'Onofrio is kingpin.
We've talked about it. From the ninja episode, from the ninja fight in season 1 on, it was a good show.
Yeah.
It was okay up till then.
Yeah.
And then the hallway fight scene, fucking great shit. Great.
That's my only complaint is they always have a hallway fight. Like, yeah. In every season, there's a hallway fight.
Yeah.
That's the District 9 influence on the cinematographer and stuff like that.
Like in this one, when he, season 3 is in the
not
prison.
District 9, The Raid.
Yeah.
The Raid.
Yeah,
District B-13 is what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also equally fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's a good one. But man, it fell off my radar, and I rewatched it, and it wraps up cleanly. It was
It does, yeah.
It's just a very, very solid show.
Let me rephrase it. Daredevil was very good.
I think Jessica Jones was
fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't finish that one either, though. I need to go back and finish it.
Was there only one season?
There were two
seasons. I didn't finish this. I need to watch the second one.
I don't think I finished it either.
Season one was
season one was spectacular.
The team show was not
Defenders
good.
Was not good. Defenders it was very was boring. Good. And that was the thing I couldn't remember. Like, it had been so long since I watched Daredevil that I didn't realize he was hurt or whatever. And I'm like, I don't remember him, a building falling on him. And that happened to Defenders. And I don't remember anything about Defenders because it sucked.
It sucked. And I know this was not popular, especially at the time. But I did not enjoy Luke Cage.
I did not enjoy Luke Cage after.
It was okay.
It drug on
it
part.
Did.
After they killed Black Mamba, right?
How are you going to be called Black Mamba?
That was, what's his name? The actor, the guy who's going to be Blade.
Marisol
now.
Ali.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
After they killed him.
Actor. Yeah.
After they killed him in the first season, I was like, you killed your best guy.
You said it was drug out, but it seems like all their shows were, though. They could have cut 2 to 3 episodes off every single one of them.
I got to tell you, another...
I just think Daredevil was the only one that I thought was tight. I didn't care for Punisher because it was boring.
I enjoyed Punisher.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Punisher.
It was an interesting take.
There were two seasons in it, too, right?
Yeah.
I didn't watch season two. Season one...
No, there was just one season.
No, there was two seasons of Punisher.
I think
the only one that had one season, and that's because apparently that dude was a terrible actor.
No, they had two seasons of that, too.
Did they really?
Yeah.
That was a bad show, dude. I couldn't
even get through five episodes of that.
They said the second season got a lot better than the first, but then... The ending of it was just horrible.
John Barenthal, good Punisher, though.
Yes.
He deserves another crack at it. I think so.
Yeah.
I don't think they're not going to give Punisher a time of day for a while.
Oh, well, I would have thought if it wasn't for the political climate we've had in the last 18 months, I would have said it was a no-brainer, but now I don't think that's happening.
No, not with the... They're trying to rebrand the flag. And, you know, it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
They're not even...
It's a whole thing, John.
But, Feige said that they haven't even guaranteed Blade's going to be a rated R film yet.
Deadpool is. Ain't no way
Deadpool's
around that.
Deadpool's the only one that's guaranteed so far.
They should make... Well,
I think you could do Blade without it. I think you do it without... It's going to be hard to not drop the F-bomb in there a lot, but...
A
lot of blood.
I mean, you could get around that since they're vampires, and you can just make them turn... He could have a silver blade or whatever
Purple
and
blood.
Turn to dust or whatever.
Purple blood.
How are they going to have the Bloodbath Rave, though?
Yeah.
Dude, that's...
Blade 1 still holds up, man.
It does.
Still a good movie.
Blade 2 is great, except for that weird fight scene with the lights, where they... You know, everybody at the time was using way too much CGI.
When they first sneak into his compound, Blade 2, I watched it a couple weeks ago too. For all those that did not like Blade 2, they can go poop themselves.
I don't think anybody did. The Del Toro
made that movie great. And all his influence on it. Now Blade 3 with Ryan
Triple
Reynolds
H.
And Triple
Jessica
H.
Biel.
Jessica Biel. The dumbest.
Pat
I listen
Oswald.
To music while I'm hunting.
But it's not enough that I listen to music and I take that sense away. I randomly shoot the lights out.
Yeah.
Because vampires see in the dark and we don't.
Yeah.
I just want to make it a little more difficult.
Yeah.
And if you watch that scene, there is no reason for her to shoot the lights out.
No,
it doesn't help anybody.
I just remember she had the vibro blade, like the thing. I'm like, There's no way you pulled this out and not cut your arm off.
Half as hot as the sun, scientifically. So what's it do? It burns half as hot as the sun. Well, what is that temperature, fuckface? Do you know? I don't think you do.
Yeah. Does it need to be that hot? And can it just be hot enough to ignite a vampire and just leave it at that?
Even though we were fresh off of things like Van Wilder, and actually we were fresh off of Waiting, and if you watch Waiting, ripped Ryan Reynolds is in Waiting.
Yeah.
He puts a shirt on, and you're like, what the fuck is that? Oh, he was getting ready for Blade.
Yeah.
Even though Ryan Reynolds is great, he's the perfect person for Deadpool, he's kind of annoying in that. Have you ever been laid? That's a dumb joke. Yeah, dumb joke.
And his hair's annoying. Everything about it was just very early 2000s.
I think we can all agree that if there's a new Blade movie, let's forget those because you don't need to.
I'm still campaigning for Wesley Snipes to be Wesker.
Whistler.
You're
Wesker?
Right. What is Wesker?
That's Wesley Snipes, Whistler combined, I guess?
No, there's a Wesker in something.
Okay. Look it up. Let's go to Google Jay. It. What do you got, Jay?
So Pepe Le Pew is not going to be in Space Jam 2.
I heard.
Shocking.
Not only is Pepe Le Pew not going to be in there, but what was the bunny's name in it? The female
Lola
bunny?
Bunny's
Lola
boots.
Bunny's been desexified. Yeah.
Wesker's from Resident Evil.
Sorry. Oh, that's right. Was that? Is that you that sent that over?
I accidentally got drunk and sent that.
I enjoyed the show. I watched all 30 minutes of it.
I actually sent it to you guys before I watched it. And then I was like, you were like, it was good. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Maybe I'll do this from now on.
Jeremy just confirmed it for me. Lola Bunny, also no more midriff, and she's going to be, desexified.
Well, here's the thing about Pepe Le Pew. There was a New York Times op-ed piece that said he normalizes rape culture.
Oh, he's the most rapey.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's his thing.
That's not shocking.
No.
The whole thing is the girl runs around telling him no, and he just doesn't take it for an answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he do. Yeah. Hey, if there's one thing about Pepe, Pepe going rape.
Yeah.
What's he going to do?
I just found it funny.
By the way, there's a good article that I read that said conservatives want you to be irate over the sex appeal of Lola Bunny.
Yeah.
And they show a lot of guys this is the only room in the house my wife will let me decorate, and it's like a bunch of Lola Bunny stuff. Like, he's jerked off in that room more than once a week, right?
Is Garth there?
Yeah. It's a...
There's a girl I follow on Twitter that wrote, like, which one of you guys jerked off of Lola Bunny so much they had to take her tits away?
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. Hey, I don't give a fuck if my cartoons are sexual or not. I just got telling you that Elsa Bloodstone kind of turns me on, so does magic a little earlier. But we can all agree that Pepe Le Pew is a rapist.
Yeah.
So, but other than that, I mean, give me sexy Lola Bunny. I mean, it does a little. I mean, it adds a little flavor to the cast. You know, hey, bunnies can be sexy too.
Why not? You're cutting out a whole furry segment.
Why? So discrimination's our thing now?
What's next? Jessica Rabbit?
Jessica Rabbit, like in the hierarchy of the Mount Rushmore sexy cartoon characters. Plus, she'd play Patty Cake with anyone.
Yeah. Man, they got to redo that at some point, right? I guess they shouldn't. I
hope they don't touch it.
I don't know if they could. I don't know if Disney and...
That all those properties would get along enough. Only Sony and Marvel can get along. And even that's very limited. That only pertains
to as long as we keep making $1 billion.
It only pertains to Spider-Man, which is the most asinine thing in the world, that you would allow your Spider-Man to go and be a part of Disney and not your Venom.
Yeah.
Because inevitably, you got like a $2 billion movie when you do Venom versus Spider-Man.
Man, Tom Hardy is a fucking fun actor to watch. Like, and it swings between things. I think I figured this out because I'm watching Peaky Blinders right now.
Oh, yeah.
And he's in season two, and I'm only like two or three episodes into it. But he's great as his character in Peaky Blinders. But he's only on screen for like 2 minutes. And I think he's like really, really strong for 2 minutes. And you're like, after a while, you're like, okay, that weird thing you're doing is too much now.
I love Tom Hardy. He is an incredibly good actor, way better than the steroids he's taken would have led me to believe that he
did. And all the other drugs that he did.
And the most steroids.
Yeah.
Look at him in that movie Warrior.
Yeah.
And look at him as Bane and even as Eddie Brock. He is a juice to the gills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's that small guy all around.
There's no repercussions for Hollywood to be juiced up. No. We know they get juiced.
I mean, look at The Rock.
Yeah.
How are you bigger now at 50 than you were at 30.
I don't have any quick hits other than this. I listen to the podcast Smartless sometimes. It's Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and Sean. Yeah. I can't remember Sean's last name, but you know, from Will and Grace.
Yeah.
Sean Hayes. Yeah. George Clooney was on this week. 60 years old.
Yep.
Unbelievable. He's the next Sean Connery. That's a good looking. I'd fuck him still.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
That is a good looking man.
Sean Penn for a minute, and I was like, what?
Yeah, no. I thought he was going to go down the road. Like he's smacking women around. Yeah.
I'm surprised he hasn't given her a rap. Yeah, that's messed up. I'm surprised Clooney hasn't gotten a cancel Clooney thing. Because,
a Me Too.
Because he
he's awesome.
I remember what he was on. He was on Leno or Conan or something, like way back in like the early 2000s. And he told a story about how him and his brother, when they would go to like Hollywood events and they would leave like those like disposable cameras.
Yep.
Him and his brother would put sunglasses on their dicks and take pictures of them.
I'm going to tell you this.
And like, that's funny, but I'm like, how has that not popped up and like cancel Clooney not happened yet?
Go ahead.
Just sounds like college.
Well, I said I had nothing, and then I brought up that episode. I'm going to tell the story that George Clooney told. You could go find this story. He told it on Carson once. I'd never heard it there.
Is it different than the same thing I'm saying?
But he told it on Smartless. So he used to live with Richard Kine. Do you know who Richard Kine is?
I know the name.
It sounds familiar.
From Scrubs, he was the guy that had that had the good tennis serve that Turk took care of. He was the hypochondriac. And he was on the political show with Michael J. Fox.
Spin City.
Yeah. So Richard,
he's a great actor.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, so because George Clooney's old as fucking dirt, when he was a struggling actor with no job, Richard Kind was on the Carol Burnett show, and he lived with George Clooney and him were roommates. He lived with him. He was the one that paid the bills. He said that this guy had a cat, and every time Richard Kind would go to sleep, he'd have sleep with a cat on him. And the cat's name was Kitty, and he loved the cat. He said, well, one day I got tired of him not cleaning out I was taking a shit. And this is his words. I was taking a shit, and I looked down, and the fucking litter box is overflowing. So I scoop all the shit out, throw in the toilet, and flush it. No big deal. He goes, I do this for every day for like a few weeks. And then one day, Richard comes in. He goes, hey, you know, my cat, Kitty, I don't think he's shit in 4 or 5 days. And he's like, I just let it go. And I go, well, I'll probably, you know, just keep monitoring maybe. And he goes, every day I'd get up, go to the bathroom, throw the shit away. So he takes the cat to the vet, and they give this cat a laxative. And George goes, so every day this cat would shit its ass off because of this laxative. And I'd scoop it, throw it away. So I give that a couple of days. And Rich is like, I don't know that the vet's working. This medicine's working. And he goes, just give it time. Maybe it takes a couple days to kick in. And he goes, and then I'm taking I go to the bathroom and take a shit. And before I do it, it hits me. I've got a shit in this litter box. So he leaves. He goes, man, it was a 6 to 8 incher I left in the litter box. And he goes, and then I go to the living room and start watching TV. And Richard Kind goes in there, and he goes, and it takes a couple minutes, but he goes, holy fuck. And I just thought, George Clooney's instantly the best guy in the world. So that's where we're going to leave it. I don't have anything else to say.
The episode.
Yeah. I don't have anything else to talk about. And before we let Jay woo the women with a sexy voice, Bender, say it.
Hold on to your butts.
Goodbye.
All right. That is it. Playing the music.